Welcome back, everyone, to our Groundskeeper Chat series. I'm your host, Meg Kruger. I am the content lead with Pioneer Athletics. And today I am joined by my co-host, Weston Appelfeller, and the newly CSFM, Danny Lazito. So I'm going to throw it over to Weston. He'll do a couple introductions here, and then we'll get started.
Hi. Thanks, Meg, for shooting that over. My name is Weston Appelfeller. I am the market technical advisor for Pioneer Athletics. Excited again today. Our guest is someone that I've gotten to know a bit over the past 5 years, an incredible person with an amazing background in turf. He has experience in the NFL, MLS, NCAA, and minor league baseball. He is currently fulfilling the role of director of sports fields and grounds with the Carolina Panthers and Charlotte FC, an NC State graduate. I give you Danny Lazito. Danny, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Hefty little intro there.
Yeah, sorry. I did a little research on the background, so I think I got it all right. I'm sorry if I missed anything. So the way we like to start this off is to hit you with a question that you may not be expecting, and it is one that I feel is probably the most important question that we could ask you, and that is, what do you do to get away from work and relax, and how do you do it? Who do you spend the time with? What activities, all of that good stuff. So what do you got?
Oh boy. Not a lot of away time this year so far, but my big things are big hockey player, love to play hockey. So I play in a men's league every Sunday. That's my big getaway where I don't get to see grass, don't get to think about it, don't get to look at it. The other one for me is now golf. Kind of became a COVID golfer, took that up when we had nothing to do when I was out in LA, and that was the first thing to open back up. So took that up, and weirdly enough, every time I'm out there golfing, I'm not really looking at the grass. I can actually just kind of detach and play and have fun. So versus going to a sporting event, if I'm watching football or baseball, I'm kind of looking at the field a little bit. So those are my big two, just kind of getting out, doing that. So that's all I have time for these days.
That kind of leads me into the next question I have for you. And this is a new portion of the show that even Meg doesn't know. I'm throwing it on her right now. So I come up with an idea called phone a mutual friend. And that is where I contact a mutual friend and have them ask a question to ask you. And today's question comes from Joe Hill, Iowa State head groundskeeper. And his question is when do you find time to actually sleep? How does that happen?
We're working on the delegation portion of this role. Something I think I struggle with just because I like working. I like doing out or being outside and doing the work. So with this role, obviously a lot of responsibility, trying to manage the multiple properties and that, and just kind of trusting the team to execute without me there. So we're getting a little bit better lately. This year we've expanded our staff. So we have a couple open positions to fill, but when we are full, we'll have a crew of 10 plus myself, so 11 total. And obviously with that staffing level, we should be able to rotate around, do some more shift work, and maybe not rely so heavily on the whole crew to be there. So when Joe came last year, he got to see kind of the all-inclusive version where all hands on deck, contractors from out of town come and help and working overnight, scrubbing, painting. So we've gotten better since then, Joe. It's all good.
I love that. Thanks for doing that, Weston. That was perfect. Danny, what we want, you know, you talked a little bit about that role, but really lay the groundwork for us. You know, tell us about your job, your current position, your turf origin story. Give us the story from A to Z.
Oh boy. So started at NC State. That was kind of when I got into turf. I did my general ed at a community college in Raleigh, transferred into State's turf program. Didn't really know about the industry much, honestly, at all before I started. I wanted to do horticulture or landscape design, and just kind of stumbled upon it when I was applying for programs. Knew a couple guys that had worked in the industry, reached out, kind of just dove in. I thought it sounded good, just working outside with my hands, manual labor was attractive to me. Working in sports obviously was cool. So, but you know, it's a stereotypical answer, I think, for a lot of guys that want to work outside and do something, you know, like that. The other side for me is like the artistic nature of it is available for me. So in the beginning, I was all baseball. That's all I wanted to do. So I did an internship with Jimmy Simpson at USA Baseball in town of Cary. That was awesome. I learned a lot. We had four fields, four interns. Every intern basically had a field to work on every day. So you had a little bit of ownership in that program. Got to, you know, have some pride in your work there. So after that, finished up at NC State. Before I graduated, I interned with John at the Washington Nationals. Wanted to try a new climate. I'd only done Bermuda grass at that point. So kind of going up to a bluegrass high event load, you know, middle transition zone area was big for me to just kind of learn a little bit more. So after that, I came back, did my last semester at State, graduated. And because of John's connections with the Padres, I was able to network into a seasonal position out there. Graduated from State, went out there in 2015. Again, different climate, different event load, completely different environment. So just trying to build upon, you know, my skill set and resume and experience while, you know, moving up the ladder and on. So definitely did a lot of moving in the beginning of my career. And a lot of it was methodical and placing myself in places that had different experiences available. So that was a really good year for me. I came right into a full field renovation after Monster Trucks. We did a full MLB season, a couple concerts here and there. So it was a lot. It was a lot to learn, really hands-on program. Did a lot. And then an assistant position was open in Reno and applied for that. Joe Hill was a new groundskeeper there. So I was there the first year he was there and learned a lot about the personal aspect of this job and the professionalism from him. So I credit him with a lot of the people management skills, the time management, the inner office personalities, everything that he brought to the table was huge for me to see and learn under. So I did a year with Joe. There was a head groundskeeper position open in Columbia, South Carolina. So I got that, moved out there, and still to this day, that was, I think, the most important move I made, just because it made me test myself and prove myself and others that, you know, everything I learned along the way to that point I could do. And it just, it puts a pressure on you that, you know, Weston knows this, that when all the weight is on you, you feel something different, right? So like that, the responsibility, you can have as much ownership and pride as an assistant in this industry as you want. But when you are in charge, it's all on you. And you feel that weight, you feel, you know, the middle of the night thoughts about irrigation or fertility or all that, it's all there. So being able to do that in early in my career was really big for me because it pushed me mentally, pushed me physically. It made me network even harder to rely on resources. That was a big thing, you know, from my mentors all the way up was networking. So again, single most important move I ever made was going to Columbia. So by that point I'd done, you know, 4 years in baseball and I was kind of, you know, feeling the weight of the schedules a little bit, wondering what else was out there. So in my time in San Diego, I had met Scott Leupold, who's a head groundskeeper at USC now. And he was new to USC at the time, was looking for an assistant, reached out, kind of, you know, sold the show out there. You know, it's a big time college program, shared a stadium with the Rams, old historic venue, a lot going on. And so it was pretty enticing and I wanted to try something other than baseball. So made the move, left Columbia after my second season, made the move out to LA and hopped right into an NFL college schedule. So we had Trojans on Saturday and we had Rams on Sunday. That first year, I think Rams went to NFC Championship. They were 15-1 that year. So that was a busy year. So we had a lot of overlap for those seasons. That was really, you know, my first taste at one, football, two, removable paints, which paid off down the line. But just kind of transitioning sport to sport. You know, we did international soccer there. We did it all. So that was cool. And then along the lines, always kind of wanted to get closer to home. You know, I was very okay through my years moving around. I was very comfortable with it. I was able to do it. So I took advantage of that. That was some advice I got early on, was don't be afraid to move around when you're kind of chasing what you're chasing. So I did it. I was able to do it. Very thankful for all the opportunities. But at the end, I still kind of wanted to get back east. So luckily, COVID happened. And fortunately, there was a position opening here as a first assistant for Tom. Tom Vaughn was a head groundskeeper for 25 seasons here. And so I got to come here and, again, learn under someone who's been here a long time, been in the league, absolute professional. So it was good. It was a good experience. He retired a year and a half later, and I got promoted in April of 22.
Great. Can I ask one question?
Yeah.
And you didn't mention this, but I've always often wondered it whenever I watch, you know, other sports get played that I've never participated in. On your job history on LinkedIn, I noticed something that was very unique that I don't know many people that have had, was the ice hockey maintenance on the rink at the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Did that help you in any way?
You know, it's funny. I don't know if it helped, but it's the same. I did that as a part-time job when I was at State. And so just a couple of buddies that I played hockey with had a in there, and obviously they have an ice maintenance crew that goes out and shovels the ice in between periods and during intermissions. You got to be able to skate, so you're skating shovels around. So they had an in, took me to a little job fair there. And honestly, I didn't want to do it because I was working a lot at USA Baseball at the time in and around school. So he talked me into going, and I ended up loving it. So a lot of the attention to detail is the exact same as maybe like grooming a baseball infield. So I always called it like the ice grounds crew, because we're just, you're shoveling, you're smoothing, you're fixing divots or pits, and you know, you're maintaining something just that has to be a smooth surface for playability, just like you are dirt.
Yeah. I've always wondered that. It seems like their level of perfectionism and ours as groundskeepers are very much on point. And I don't know that I've ever met anybody who's done both. So
yeah, it's pretty cool. And they also, now they're starting to ice in stencils, but a lot of it's still based and they paint. So they paint logos. They have, you know, the artistic side there too. So it's pretty cool. There is a little bit of overlap there.
Well, great. So throughout your career, you've seen different groundskeepers. You've worked with different groundskeepers. You know, you've been at different levels. How have you seen the role of a groundskeeper evolve in the last 10 years?
I think the biggest thing is problem solvers and event managers. I think, you know, of old, it was, you know, your job is just groundskeeping, right? These venues weren't hosting events. They weren't using the surfaces for different things. They weren't replacing the fields as often. So now, you know, with all of the live event and the demand to use your building for a source of revenue, comes opportunity for you to learn, you to solve problems, challenges. So I think the role has kind of evolved into more than just, I think the titles, when people have like field operations as their title, that might be like the evolution in a direct correlation to a title, right? It's not just a groundskeeper anymore. We're not just managing the turf or the grass and the landscape. That's not happening anymore. It's all encompassing. So field operations or sports field manager, really managing the surface as a whole and all that pertains to these venues, especially at this level. You know, obviously it ranges with different scope, but for this building especially, you know, we have a lot in our scope. We have our natural grass fields, we have our synthetic fields, we have our landscape properties that we maintain. So we have quite a bit, and we use our stadium for a lot. You know, we own our flooring, so we have it readily available. We do events, we do galas, we do concerts. So with the exception of having a roof, we're trying to, you know, push the limits here. So managing all that, managing the damage, the wear and tear, the maintenance to make sure the fields are playable after that, even being synthetic, that's a challenge as well. And then all while managing our practice facilities, which have an indoor portion that they also use for events. So, you know, there's a lot of demand on our departments and our roles now. And I think that has definitely evolved over the years, even since when I got in.
Well, yeah, just the introduction of an event management alone is like a whole new, you know, scope of work. And we've been talking a lot about this topic the last couple of weeks, just, you know, how a groundskeeper really has to be fully equipped in business best practices as well. Budgeting, scheduling, you know, negotiating labor and costs. And definitely when that comes to conversions and event management. So just from, you know, your point of view, like walk us through a typical conversion and really walk us through like what the planning and performing of that task looks like. So, you know, it happens between this hour and that hour, but how advanced are you planning, you know, everything before it actually takes place?
Yeah. Honestly, it kind of starts a year in advance. So, and that's, it's interesting. So we work very closely with our live events department and our operations team. And when the schedules come out with each team, being that we share our facility, we have an overlapping season, right? So we overlap from August to October. And if the MLS pushes now into December, you know, that could be almost our entire NFL season of overlap. So we look at these when the schedules come out, first and foremost. So as soon as those dates go on the calendar, we see, okay, wow, we have an overnight here. We have a 2-day window here. We have a 3-day window. We have a, you know, 5-day gap with 3 games in it. So that starts the conversation. What do we need? How many people do we need to achieve this? What is our timeline? So in the beginning, it was harder to project these overlap times because we didn't know what it was going to take. We were brand new to removing paint on synthetic. We were, you know, new to using Purex machines. New to removable paints. So it was just a different beast that we were taking on. So as we learn, we know exactly how much time, you know, in a perfect setting that it takes us to remove paint, add the paint, transition, remove benches, all the things we got to do. So we start to break it down into a timeline. And then we can kind of write a little schedule. It says, you know, if the game ends at 11 p.m. and we're on at midnight, we take 8 hours to convert, export to this, and so forth and so on. We write a little timeline. And that kind of leads the conversation to what's actually feasible. So if we know our timelines, we're going to plan for the worst and then execute. And so far, knock on wood, we've been very successful. And so we always make sure that we go through that. And our other departments that we work with are really good at making sure we're in the conversation. And I know we'll get to that, but like being a part of that conversation is half the battle, right? Instead of letting the event go off or get scheduled without input, you know, that the logistics and the strategic planning are step one to us being successful. You know, most of the people in our industry can do the job. It's just, you can't buy time, right? So time is the resource that you can only spend. So we're always up against it here, not having a roof. You know, we have to plan for weather. And that's something, again, we start planning for that months in advance. You know, when we get that schedule overlap and it's finally out with both sports, we know that in the scenarios where we're going overnight back to back, soccer to football or football to soccer on a Monday, Wednesday or something like that, we might need some cure paint, or we might need some aerosol paint stock, or we might need extra bodies coming in from out of town. We might need an extra Purex machine on loan. You know, those are the things that we're starting to stock up. So as we go through, especially even going back to budget season, I know, you know, we're going to plan for 2 to 3 overnights a year. We're going to plan for 2 to 3 potential overnights using 100% aerosol. Right. So we need to make sure that our stock allows for that. We need to plan for the budget aspect of that. And then we move into the operational side. And last year, we actually, our first overlap season with a new soccer team, we had our home opener for the Panthers on a Sunday and a soccer match the Saturday before it. So we had never, you know, been in an overnight situation before, and it was April, and that was coming in September, and we were already talking about rain, right? And so everyone in the room is looking at you like, what do you mean rain? I'm like, just got to plan for it, right? We can't be blindsided by weather when it comes. And sure enough, it rained that night after the soccer match. We were moved in the rain. We painted 100% aerosol with game line, and we got it done, but we had extra bodies. Joe was actually there for the first one. So we had everyone shaking cans and running aerosol yard lines, 6 foot border logos. So we did it all in aerosol. It was crazy. That was our first time. So everything that we planned for kind of came to reality. So it almost validated everything that we were doing.
So you talked about when you get the schedule a year in advance and you're looking at that and thinking, you know, how are we going to do this? What is the gap that makes you scared? Is it the overnights? Obviously have scariness to them, but is it, you know, Sunday to Wednesday? Are you still scared by that? Or are you comfortable now with that? Like, at what point did you get comfortable doing this, and how long is that gap?
Yeah. So now we've actually done them all up until actually a few weeks ago. We just had our first, what do we go? So year one, we did soccer into football. This year we did football into soccer. And then a couple of weeks ago, we had a Saturday night soccer match and Monday night football game, and then a Wednesday night soccer match. So we had back to back to back. But we also had a 1 day turnaround from Beyonce into a preseason NFL game. And our worst case scenario happened where the stage loaded out 16 hours late. So we planned for that by just painting the field underneath the flooring prior to the flooring going down, just in case we ran out of time. And we did that. And when the field came up, we had less than 12 hours to get it ready, but it was just a recoat of paint, touch up, groom, because we had already had it down. So I don't know which one scares me most. they each have their quirks. Going from soccer to football, I think, feels easier because getting soccer lines off is really quick relative to football, right? So getting a soccer field removed and blanking your surface and then converting to football, there's a lot more to paint, but I would rather rush a paint than rush a removal, if that makes sense. So going from football into a soccer match, you're on the clock to remove paint. And the whole goal for us is on the aesthetic side is to make sure it looks clean, right? You don't want to see the sport from the night before. So if we're at the mercy of lightning, that's what really gets us in trouble here. We get a lot of pop-up storms in the summer. So if we're at the mercy of that, we can't work no matter what. So if we can't get the paint off, that's an issue, right? So we could be facing fines from the next sport the next night. So knowing I can get a soccer field off quicker, it puts me at ease knowing, okay, I can paint an entire NFL field in aerosol if I have to, versus it's going to take me 6 hours to remove this football field. And if we do a poor job on doing it, you're going to see it on the MLS side the next day. So if I had to choose, I'd always go Saturday, Sunday versus like a Thursday night or a Friday or a Wednesday, Thursday, something like that. So
I don't even know where to start after all that. I'm just thinking of all the sleepless nights and I'm just like, oh Lord.
Yeah.
But I really want to go back to what you said about how being consulted, you know, that year in advance, or being, you know, asked to have an input at the beginning is really what is going to make or break somebody. And I think back to like when I first met Weston, he was like this anomaly. Is that how you say it? anomaly in the industry, where he was, you know, being invited to be consulted before the stadium was even up and running. And how cool of a story that was. But that's still not the norm. And that's still, you know, especially when we take NFL out of the equation and we're looking at the everyday parks and rec or college or high school, and those people have not been invited to the table. You know, what's your advice for getting those conversations started? Or how did they justify their need to be consulted at every, you know, a year in advance, or at the level that, you know, you said has made you successful?
Yeah, I think, and again, going back to kind of a lot of the things I learned from Joe Hill, John Turnauer, Jimmy Simpson, Peter Hayes, the guys that I worked for, they were all pros. And I don't mean that in like the groundskeeping sense. They handled themselves very professionally. They were able to wear different hats. You know, they all had business acumen. They were all personable people. You know, those the professionalism traits that kind of come with this job carry a lot more weight than people think. Especially, and it might be just as important, you know, for a Parks and Rec, or if you report to a board of board of directors or high level ownership like here, how you present yourself in those settings, those group settings, how you carry yourself, your education, your confidence in your education to articulate it, your ability to dumb it down when needed to, and articulate these things, that all carries a lot of weight for me. And those are the things I learned along the way from those guys, is how people view you. You know, that matters in step one, right? And then it's about actually letting your work prove that you know what you're doing. Or you have to be good at your job too. Can't all just be that. Can't just be a pure politician in those senses. But your work follows, right? So if you're good at your job, that's step one, because the results are there. When you get invited or you have a conversation and you're articulating for future planning and you describe a scenario that might happen and then it happens and you succeeded, that's validation and that's credit, right? So building those opportunities is step one. And I think a lot of it too is just like kind of building that culture. I think there's, you know, we talk about a lot in our industry, sometimes like there's a negative connotation with the word groundskeeper, right? It's the dirty guys, it's the blue collar guys, it's the landscapers, whatever you want to call it. The Carl Spacklers, like, that doesn't always have to be true, you know, and a lot of us enjoy that aspect. It is a very blue collar industry, right? But you have to be able to turn it around and also participate in a white collar world, to use it, you know, those terms. You know, if I go upstairs to an ownership meeting and I'm asking for a couple $1 million, I can't go up and put outfit covered in paint. You know, like those little things, they matter. So same thing with Parks and Rec. If you're going to a board of directors meeting, or you're going somewhere to ask for a lot of money, because a lot of what we do is spending money, you got to, you know, be able to change it around a little bit, you know, present yourself the right way. And it's not to say that you can't be dirty, right? Like that's a normal thing. That's what we do. We enjoy that. And I love that portion of it. We also just got to be able to switch it around and wear a different hat, for lack of a better term.
Nice. Two things on this. One is, you know, you just talked about covered in paint, and I want to say Danny is the professional's professional at this, because even when he's going into a podcast, which we're, you know, shooting, most people either listen to, you know, just via audio and on a podcast, or they'll watch the video of this. He wanted to look clean. And so we had the discussion before that he may be a couple minutes late because he was, you know, just got off the field painting and he wanted to change his clothes. So, you know, that means something to the fact that he's even willing to do it in this situation. And somebody's going to watch this and think, wow, you know, this is awesome. Like, it's great. And then, you know, the other question I have is when you're at the table and you start bringing in data points, and I want to reference a call, you know, you and I had 2 weeks ago. You were gathering information for an upcoming construction project, right? And you needed to know some stuff, and were asking, you know, what I had heard in the market with who was getting certain pieces of technology, right? Like, how important are those data points when you get to the table to be able to have in a conversation with the gals or the guys that are higher than you in the leadership, and you're sitting there and presenting those? You know, how valuable are those?
Yeah, it's extremely valuable, because it's expected, especially here, right? Like it's expected that you are up to date in the industry, you're networked well, you're up to speed on who has what. And sometimes they, you know, ownership or leadership, they just want to know. They like comparisons, right? If it makes them feel better if they know that other teams are buying into the same things you're asking for. And that's, you know, that's kind of a situation we found ourselves in is, you know, we have presented this high level technology for Fields. They were curious about it. They don't know about it. It's not their language. So when you start bringing in data and science, you know, sometimes you can lose them. So then just a simple argument of who else is doing this? Well, actually, these 15 teams in the league are actually doing the same thing. Oh, okay. So those little things, but they'll ask you right away, like, who has it? What is this? You know, how do they use it? How is this used? And if you don't know, then, you know, you're at a disadvantage for winning that argument or, you know, crossing that bridge. So for me, it's extremely valuable, but it also goes back to the networking aspect. And I think this industry is unique in that everyone's willing to talk to everyone. Everyone loves talking about grass and turf and chit-chatting about that. So I think it's a very inviting and open line of communication for anyone. It feels like within two phone calls, you can reach almost everyone just because everyone's interned with someone who's worked with this guy who's interned there. And, you know, it's a very tight-knit little web of industry professionals. So, you know, even before I met Weston years ago, just having worked for Joe and Joe knew Weston and just the ability years later to just call and say, hey, man, like, I know we don't know each other in person, but X, Y, Z, right? So it's very open and inviting. So I think that's the basis, because then you can gather that information quicker than trying to sit on Google and find it out. You know, I would rather call Weston and say, in your experience, because I know you've been through this before, you know, what information were you able to gather? Who else should I reach out to? And then it's next step. And then you go down the line, and that real world, real time experience, networking information collection is so important to go in there to back up everything you're saying. Because you have to know, you have to have two different versions of every answer ready for you.
And Meg, I will say that when he was asking the questions, I was texting away as he was talking, trying to get info. And he said he had a meeting in like 30 minutes, and I'm sure his phone was still buzzing while he's in the meeting. And he's probably already presented the information. And like, oh, by the way, this club has this. This club has this. So,
So my follow-up question to that was, you know, you were talking so eloquently about the importance of everyone in this industry just being able to rely on each other, the wealth of, you know, sharing information and how that helps combat misconceptions. But like another part of that is really mentorship. And you talked again about some of the people that you were able to work and learn from. But you've also kind of played a role in, you know, you've had the Tiger Turf grass students out there and had the ability to, you know, work with them. So like, even going beyond that, like how important is mentorship to you now that you're in that position to kind of lead and play a role there?
Yeah, I really enjoy hosting people here. I think it's an experience that I didn't really get when I was in school, other than doing my internships. And we don't have a massive candidate pool in this industry, right? So, you know, it's just kind of doing our part to try and expose people to what we have going on, to see, you know, the intricacies of our venue and maybe just pique interest. So what Drew's got going on is something special. You know, just having that many kids exposed to this industry before they even get to choose to apply to college is huge. So, you know, I think in another world, if I wasn't working so much, I think I could, you know, enjoy being a teacher in a classroom, but I think I'd also drive myself crazy being in the classroom every day. So, but I love it. I've had some really, really good mentors my entire way through this career and industry. So, you know, I want to try to do that for other people too. And there's a few people in this industry that if you just look down the tree of people and lineage of the guys who have worked for certain people, you know, there could be 20 head groundskeepers out there that have worked for one guy. There's a few people like that that are just, it's kind of inspiring. I think it's awesome. Just the long tenured professionals that, you know, have maintained and and been able to teach and produce high level industry peers. So for me, just bringing anyone in is awesome. We rely on that labor here just to get the job done. We have a big full-time staff, but when we're doing overnight conversions, we don't have enough. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's hard for us to sustain a part-time staff just because of the kind of erratic schedule that we work. Mm-hmm. So we rely on contracting. Well, we call them contractors. So we bring people in. And my thing is that if you can get here, we'll pay you, we'll feed you, and, you know, we'll put you in a hotel. So as long as you can come, you know, afford the plane ticket, you're welcome from anywhere. So, and it doesn't really matter to me what sector of the industry. I'm not bringing in NFL guys to do this. I'm, you know, it's college guys, it's minor league baseball people. It's anyone who's in this industry for me. So, you know, when I met Drew, it was a no brainer to say like, hey, why don't you bring your kids down for a field trip? You know, mm-hmm. just bring them down. It doesn't even have to be during a conversion. They can just come, you know, we'll host you. It doesn't matter. So obviously the first time they came down was awesome. They came down for the ACC prep and they got to see a lot. They got to paint there, you know, we put them on logos with our guys. And I think one of the cool things is, you know, while I get to also have that effect on my crew, when we have guests, I find that my crew gets to reinforce their knowledge and yeah. also teach. And it's subconscious. So they're taking the guests and we have to split up. So I say, you know, these three people are going to go take these groups and go do what we normally do every day. You know, and that little sense of ownership, pride, and leadership, it goes a long way because then they take them, they reinforce what they already know, and they have to teach it to someone else. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's multiple factors of that going on all at once. So mm-hmm. that's kind of cool to see. And then when we bring in other industry professionals or equals, you know, if I bring in Casey Carrick from UNC, Casey does what we do all the time. So there's a confidence boost on my end to say, like, if we get into a bind in the middle of the night in the rain or whatever, I have all these professionals with me that are my peers that are, you know, have come up through the industry at the same time. And, you know, I can rely on their skill set too. It's not just all on me. So there's a big weight lift there mentally during those times to have the different people here, you know, and it's not just our crew. And they feel that too. Like they know that these guys are also equals at their respective facilities mm-hmm. and know they're talented. And it's just, I think it's really important. I think it's admirable for the people that I admire that have done it for mm-hmm. so long and just kind of kept people in the industry engaged. So the next step, obviously, like what Drew's doing is we got to find more people and we got to expose them to it. And at the end of the day, yeah, it's hard work. And it's a lot of hours at some facilities, but it doesn't mean it's not, you know, a rewarding profession.
Definitely. And just a follow-up question to that, because I like what you said about, you know, it's your responsibility in a sense to keep people engaged in this field and so that they can have a long tenure here. And really, at what point, you know, as the head guy, do you start bringing along someone else to help with some of those like higher level tasks? So, you know, you guys, you have things on the field that you have to get done, but what time do you start bringing someone in to help with the budgeting, to help with yeah. the scheduling, or really get them involved so that, you know, they potentially could move on and run their own show one day?
Yeah, I think that one's I always find that as like a delicate balance because I think when I was in the internship roles or the seasonal roles, I just asked a lot of questions all the time. Mm-hmm. It was just pestering with questions and I wanted to do this and learn this. And so when people don't do that to me, I'm always like, why aren't you as interested? You know, so it's always interesting. So what we actually have, you know, our HR goals here that we set for each employee. And for my managers, at the beginning, we go through and say, you know, like, what are your goals in your career? And if their career aspirations are to get to this level, then we quickly have a kind of a roadmap to get there. Like, what does it take and what do they want? But I try to pose those questions to come from them. I want them to want to learn that. And quite frankly, it's hard in a given day to just brain dump that type of information when they're also required to be out working as well. So when they want to learn it, it's super easy to teach, because then you can, one, they're engaged, two, but they're asking the right questions. So what we do is, you know, especially on the planning side, that's hard. It's, you know, it's hard to teach someone, you know, what to think of. And a lot of it comes from years of repetition, right? So we will bring our managers to meetings, our planning meetings, and they, you know, they're just there to listen. They're to listen to the conversations that are going on between departments, between entities, vendors, clients. And when it comes to budgeting, same thing around budgeting season when we're planning, you know, we go over, same thing with our fertility program. We're going over my plan in my head out on paper. And we just kind of sit down and go through that. But yeah, personally, I'm big on, as much as I want to constantly teach, you know, we all have a job to do. And that's, like I said, it's the hardest thing that I struggle with, is trying to teach and take care of the managerial side, as well as really, really just wanting to be hands-on. Right. So that's, you know, that's the big thing for me to develop over my career now. But I love when the guys ask those questions and they are engaged, because it reaffirms like what we're all here for, you know. And I want them to do that. I want them to move on if they want to, and to go be their own version, so they can take everything they've learned and, you know, try to go be better. So.
Sorry, Weston, I was leaving that open for you.
No, that's great. Are we ready for the weather report?
I think so. I think, I guess I had one more follow-up question for him that I could ask before we dive in. Well, I guess it's not so much as a question, but like we talked with John Torres from the Philadelphia Union a couple weeks ago, and like he very much said the same thing that you just were saying there, just that like really it's about knocking on the door. If you have someone that's just there and they put their head down and they get the job done, great. Like, you need the job done at the end of the day. But if you really want to invest in an employee and help them get to the next level, they need to be the one knocking on the door and asking to be engaged in that part. So I guess that's just me reiterating advice for anyone in the next generation, is that you got to be knocking on the door or asking the questions and making it known that you want to get to that level, and not just expecting the person who's got a lot on their plate to be hand delivering you that silver platter. So,
yeah. And I think that one, so when we have an intern or a new employee, that's probably the number one thing I try to reiterate to them, is if you want to know anything, you have to ask. Mm-hmm. And I may not have the answer, but we'll find it. We'll call Weston. We'll find the answer. there's gotta be that drive to know. I can't, in this pace and this environment and our responsibility, I don't have a lot of time to come in every day and just go through my list of guys and say, what does each one of these people lack and what do they need to learn every single day? And I don't, with our demands, I don't have the time to just say, okay, well, X employee needs to work on budgeting today. Let's take the time. I need to hear from them. I need that feedback that says like, hey man, like, when are we going into budget season? Oh, cool. Do you mind if I sit with you in that meeting? Absolutely. You know, we're not gatekeeping any information. I just need you guys to show interest, right? Mm-hmm. And that's huge for the younger generation. When you're in these internships and you're going around and you're doing these and you're building your resume. So that resume, people are going to look at you blindly. They're also going to do reference checks and they're going to see, oh, you worked at the Panthers. Well, if you leave the Panthers and you don't know anything, you know, at your next facility, that looks poor on us and what we've done. So it's a poor reflection. So, but you also need to come through, you know, if you go to work for Weston, you go to work for me, or you go to work for Joe, you need to understand what you're getting into and how busy of an operation these places are and what do you want to learn? It's your internship. It's your degree. You know, same thing goes for school. I have not a saying, but I always tell, you know, our students that we have, like, there's a big difference between a degree and an education. Mm-hmm. Your piece of paper doesn't mean anything if it's not backed by the knowledge that it comes with. Right. Yes. So, you know, I take offense when people, you know, go through, they complete a program and they're like, oh, I got a turf degree. And I'm like, all right, cool. And then we start talking turf and they're a new student. They, you know, they're joking about cheating their way through or getting C's or this or that. And I'm like, all right, like, I get it. You know, there's work experience and there's degrees, but I think it's such a science-based niche industry. Like I take a lot of pride in that. Like knowing the science gives you the decision-making and the confidence to know why you're making the decisions you're doing. So
definitely,
you don't have to put all that in there. I was just random.
Well, it was so eloquently said. We'll definitely include it there.
And just know, if you call me and ask for an answer, if I don't have the answer, I'll make it up, but I'll deliver it with confidence.
Yeah.
Real world application there.
Yeah.
Well, now I think we're ready for the weather report, Weston. So I'll let you kick that off.
All right. So the weather report is basically what in the industry has you excited. What current thing has you, you know, looking forward to it? And I'm going to ask you about one, and I don't know whether it's yours or not, but I'm going to ask you about one because I feel like it's timely with what you have coming up. You're a soccer guy and you're a football guy, but you're about to go overseas and help make a soccer stadium into a football stadium.
Yeah.
So NFL in Europe, what's that looking like for you?
Yeah. So that's one of mine, right? That's exciting for me for multiple reasons. But it's actually kind of tied into it as we talk into field technology and the resources that are put into these facilities to make grass work. Those facilities, especially Tottenham, going over there for the London games, they're highlighting these technologies that are available to us in our industry, you know, and it's something new. It's something I haven't seen before. So I'm really excited to get over there, get to see these facilities. I worked with Carl in Germany from Wembley last year and just kind of getting to pick his brain on everything, their practices, what they do, how they manage, just to hear someone in another country do the same job as us in a different sport on a different stage and find the similarities and differences in all of what we do. It's crazy. And it's such a unique experience. You get over there and you start talking about your jobs and we see each other on Twitter and you see all the glory shots and Instagram and this and that. And you always wonder like, oh my gosh, like how do they do this? And then when you actually get down to it, it's the same thing as we're all doing the same job. You just have different tricks and methods and that's kind of the fun part of going over there. So same as going to the Super Bowls, doing these NFL events has just been really, really special. I value them. I'm very thankful for them or to be able to be included and invited to do these multiple years in a row now. So I think it's really unique. When you have that many guys or girls that are in this industry all together in a room, your leadership is willing to accept, you know, your ideas and everything. We all are really good at our jobs and we all do the same job at home, but then you're all put into, you know, someone else's facility. You're given the same tools and you all have to do it. And it's really fun to watch kind of everyone's brain just even critique it, right? You're like, you're doing someone's method and it's not, you have 12 different guys and 12 different methods, right? Everyone does it a little bit different. And so y'all, you know, you talk about it, you settle on, you know, whatever you do. And it's just awesome to see. But then the coolest part is if there's a challenge or a problem, how fast that gets solved, right? So like anything happens, weather related, paint, this, that, the amount of brain power that's there at any minute to solve that problem is pretty impressive. And so many years collectively of experience put together in that shop it's pretty special. So I love that. I love going over there. Like I said, a couple Super Bowls in Germany last year, and now this year I'm going to London and Germany. So just getting to be a part of that. And then also, you know, having the freedom here and the trust in our leadership to allow me to go do that in the middle of a season is pretty big. It stresses the crap out of me leaving here for 2 weeks at a time. But at the same time, it's really good for my guys to feel some of that ownership and leadership and test them while I'm gone. So I'm looking forward to them executing without me here.
Definitely. Well, I'll piggyback on that and say my weather report is to see Nick Pappas, his photography and videography in action again. I just remember like retweeting and sharing all the stuff that he was like, his muse last year was Brian Johnson. I feel like it's just every couple days there was a glamour shot of Brian Johnson out there. And so that's the London Games. I'm definitely excited to see those play out on social again, because it's an exciting time. It's like summer camp for you guys. You guys are all together. You guys are all buddies, and everyone's just excited to be involved.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So very last question then. When do you sleep?
Yeah, so that's the one thing I think about this whole this season too. Last year was probably taking over here, and this year I say it all the time. It's the hardest job I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most comprehensive. It's the most mentally consuming, time consuming. But I still love it, and it's challenging. It's rewarding. I don't mind the hours all the time. You know, I go through ebbs and flows of feeling like I'm overworked, and then also I just don't mind it. You know, it's what I know. It's what I do. You know, may not be the healthiest thing mentally, but it's, I'm just still in that period, I think, where I do enjoy it. And, you know, maybe not the best use of my time sometimes to spend it going to work somewhere else, but it doesn't feel like those experiences don't feel like work over there at all. You know, you're going to work, and you're going to work a lot of hours when you're there, but the situation, like the morale in the group, the environment, there's so much underlying adrenaline just kind of pushing you along that, you know, 7, 8, 10 consecutive 12, 15 hour days doesn't even feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of camaraderie building. There's a lot of, like I said, morale, everyone's in good spirits. It's just it's a unique thing. So it's kind of rejuvenating too, right? So, you know, we're getting to the point in our year where soccer is going to be wrapping up, and we've had a hell of a season. Super busy, and right when I probably have 2 weeks off to just relax, I'm shipping over there to go do that. So I might pay for that in January where I'm absolutely gassed, but I still think it's worth it. It's good to network. It's good to be a part of. It's just a good time. So,
well, thank you.
And it's fun for all of us to watch along at home. So
you're doing great. You're doing a great job, man.
We'll address the sleepless nights another day. Well, thank you so much for doing this. We know, as we've just covered in the last hour, that you're a busy guy. So we appreciate the time and the knowledge for sure. I think a lot of golden nuggets in there for anyone listening.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.